Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report, getting an update from Graphene Manufacturing Group. I'm going to be addressing a lot of the questions that you all have sent in on the company's three main divisions here, the battery development division, thermal XR, as well as the lubricant division. We're also going to talk about general corporate strategy when it comes to cash maintenance. I'm chatting with Craig Nickel, founder and CEO of Graphene Manufacturing Group, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol GMG and on the OTCQX under the symbol GMGMF. Now, Craig, we're going to run a webinar here in the future, but I've had a lot of questions come in on the back of our last interview that happened in the middle of March. Let's start right into the battery division questions. The first question about the pouch cell manufacturing process. Last interview, you mentioned that you're using commercial materials in the pouch cells. Can you elaborate on this, please?
Hey, great to be back on, Corey. Yeah, I certainly can. So the materials that we use are obviously have to be cost effective, and they obviously have to do the job. So our scientists are doing a lot of work on making sure they do the job. But of course, they're also now checking in. We're now bringing our business people in to look at the costs and a modeling of operating costs and how that looks. And of course, you know, until we lock down the actual battery, you can't finalize it, but it does look good. It looks promising, which we knew it would, because it's such a low material type battery. So now what we're doing is basically taking off the shelf separator, which is the piece of plastic between a piece of material between the cathode and the anode, and then the foil, which is off the shelf. Now, we do take, you know, some graphene. We've been testing graphene from around the world. We do look at composites. We look at different carbons to mix in with ours, because it's all about carbon for our battery. And we do different types of layering as well, all different ways of improving and managing our battery performance. So yes, we do use off-the-shelf materials. We use different types of carbons, but our mainstay is our graphene. And it's, from what we've seen, the best outcome of all the graphenes. And, you know, I'd happily share you that we've got other graphenes out there, but we've tested every graphene we can get our hands on, and our graphene is absolutely still the best for our battery. And so, yeah, when I talk about commercial materials, it's getting all those different materials off the shelf, and then you need to know that they're available to be able to scale. And when you build a plant, that you can go forward with them and get more as you need.
So have you locked down what commercial materials you need, or are you still testing different, I guess, mixes of them and even where you source them?
Oh, I'd suggest to you that, you know, we would probably be trying, you know, 20 or so different materials of some right across the board at any one time. So, no, I wouldn't say we've locked them down. We certainly know some suppliers that we're keen to work with more than others, you know, because it's all about consistency and it's all about getting good quality products when you need them and then having the price, you know, relative to performance and all that. So, you know, I think that'll come as we start to finalize the final cells that we'll send out for final testing. And then, you know, as over time, it will continue to be managed over the next, you know, however long years we continue to optimize the battery, you know, 10, 20, 30 years as we keep optimizing it and we have put it into production at different plants around the world. Well, that's planned anyway. And then, you know, each one might have a slightly different material, which then gets a different outcome, because it's all about the nanomaterials with batteries, and we need to have regular good quality supply at low cost. Now, we've got a very low number of materials in our battery, our graphene, foil, separator, and aluminium chloride, basically, to name the big materials. So there's not many, but, you know, they all have to be pretty much spot on, and, you know, we're always engaging as many suppliers we can to test and try out as many in this space we can.
Okay. Thank you, Craig, for addressing that. Another question regarding more energy and power density of these batteries when it comes to putting them in an actual device. We get some data out of the coin cells, but that might not carry over to the pouch cells. The question also is asking about general graphene electrode thickness. So overall, when you're looking at energy and power density data, how can you go about comparing coin cells to pouch cells, and how might those vary?
Yeah, so your coin cells are a really good indicator of the potential for different electrochemistry systems to work. When you go to pouch cell, you've got an area which might be 100 times bigger or 1,000 times bigger, multiple layers, but 100 times could be just one layer. So you start to see other reactions that you hadn't seen before in the coin cell. And yes, you do have a thicker, tend to have a different thicker cathode for us than in the coin cell. And that can also have different outcomes. They're not always in one direction. You just find different outcomes because you see the chemistry at a grander scale. Typically, that happens with all chemistries. It happens with lithium ion chemistries and all different types. You do your coin cells. You know, I have a good authority that the largest battery companies in the world still do coin cells to do quick testing and enables you to understand where it's at so you can go forward with some really clear understanding that things work. But your pouch cells, where it starts to really come together and you understand how it all comes in one way. And so that's that space we're obviously at. You know, we're at what's called battery technology readiness level 4, which means we're optimizing the electrochemistry. So we're literally optimizing how much graphene, how much electrolyte, and how much anode. So graphene's on the cathode, and then you're optimizing the weights and the types and the surface chemistry, the surface morphology. There's all the things in there that you could optimize. It all has an impact, and we're testing those. And we have one of the best in the business helping us, Mr. Bob Galyon, a director of GMG, who's, you know, he was the chief technology officer for CATL, seriously well-endowed, experienced battery master. He was in charge of batteries for General Motors as well prior to that. So I think there's probably only one or two other people in the world who might be competing with his knowledge of batteries. He meets with our team every 2 weeks. He was just here for a whole week, only a couple of weeks ago. Very knowledgeable. He wants to be a part of the next generation type batteries, and he sees this as truly, genuinely one of them, which is really exciting. You know, an aluminium ion battery, really fast charging, very safe, long lasting. He sees that as a really, really big thing for mankind, for society, not just for us. So that's why he wants to help, and that's why he's the director of the company.
So, Craig, when will we get some more battery data results, either from coin cells or the pouch cells?
Yeah, we'd look to do a publication of the pouch cells after we've done the testing, which we aim to do by the end of June. So we've said that we're going to hit that, you know, the final testing of our pouch cells by the end of June, probably for about the last year. So, you know, that's still our target. It's the time we've got to have everything ready and finalized for our customers as well. And so we have a number of companies keen to test, and that's what they're keen to do. So, you know, we're pushing for that. And, you know, the battery team is definitely very focused on that. And that'll mean optimizing all the different areas of the battery to a point where we can send it out, get it tested, and then hopefully have that out in the press, validated by third parties. Because your batteries are certainly very multidimensional. And if anybody knows enough about batteries, you can certainly say stuff which, you know, has different elements of it which need to be taken into account. So we really want to get this validated externally. And so we've got the next 3 months we're going to push to make that happen.
So when you do get these pouch cells out to be tested, obviously Rio Tinto, that you have that joint development agreement, they'll be testing them. Who else can you send them to? How big of a market could that be?
Yeah, so Rio is obviously really, because of the energy transition and the very large focus on reducing its emissions, you know, is very interested in seeing how it can use as many batteries as they can, wherever they can, and they have some very large amounts of battery requirements that if you look at are going to mean, you know, if we can provide a small percentage of them, which of course we would hope, then we'll be supplying a lot of batteries just for that one customer. So they certainly have got a lot of energy intensive industry. We need to decarbonize the companies that are actually operating to provide the decarbonizing materials. Otherwise, you can chase your tail in this space. So that's really where this is coming from. They realize that they need to decarbonize to be able to have materials that can be supplied to decarbonize society. So that's that space that we're quite aligned with. They are very keen to go on to the next phase, of course, which would mean us building our battery plant and then creating modules for them, which is the end outcome, which we need to do next year. For this first phase, it's tested cells by end of June, have them available, and then we go on to hopefully push into the next phase of the automatic battery pilot plant and then be able to make modules from that.
Okay. That gives us a bit more of a timeline then, especially when it comes to Rio Tinto and some of the batteries. Let's move on to the Thermal XR division. A lot of questions came in on the back of the EPA approval. Still waiting in the U.S. for the approval there. I know we discussed it in the last interview, but can you talk to us about what happened here? Why didn't that approval go through the first time? Why do you need to look at almost a different approval format?
Yeah, it's just a thing about environmental regulations per country for nanomaterials. They do tend to require some very detailed knowledge about how each country sees the risk and how they manage it. We'd certainly got a large amount of advice from a number of different companies and agencies and consultants on how we were to put our application in for it. With New Caledon, our distributor, we have to have a bona fide importer who actually supplies the information into the EPA. We had different agencies with all the health and toxicity data behind the graphene. A chemical also supply all that information, showing us that it was largely, it's a non-toxic type product. However, when we put it in, it was in a low volume exemption, which is how we've got the approval in Australia and also in Canada, which means you get a small amount of product, which still means, I'd say, 1 million liters per annum of allowance. So 1 million liters of TXR is a lot of that's a lot of revenue. That's about $100 million or more per annum. So, I think we're quite happy up front to have that low volume exemption. What's happened in the end is the EPA basically said we really need to see this in a full assessment, and then we'll condition it around the areas that they want to condition, that we were actually already prescribing constraints around how our product would be used. That's where we ended up. And so we're going through the process of basically putting together our submission now. And, we should be putting it in shortly. And once we do, we'll definitely updating the market on that. And then we'll go through the process of making sure the EPA is aware of what we're doing.
Okay. Now, New Caledon, they're helping you with this. So I assume they're still joining in with this consistent approval process. Did that all catch them off guard as well? Or how are they reacting to this change in the permitting, I guess?
Yeah, look, it's a delicate process of working through what the regulator wants to understand about a new nanomaterial. America has approved graphene products and coatings. Our product is approved in Australia and Canada, and it can go into other countries as well around the world. It can definitely go into Europe as well. So it was a bit of a surprise. I think New Caledon's still working through what that means in terms of how to make the best submission and make sure this next one hits the mark, which is what we had to do in Australia as well. This is exactly how we had to go through our Australian regulation approvals. First, we got basically knocked back in a way, and then we found our way through it and we went back in again and we got approved. So, we were helping definitely New Caledon as much as we can there, and we're supporting them, and they're very supportive of going forward this on a revised application.
All right, now continuing on with the Thermal XR division, when it comes to potential customers, what about working with OEMs? So these companies who provide goods and components to the production of larger items. Are you working with OEMs? Would the TXR fit into that?
Yeah, definitely. So we've received quite a few requests for OEM products. We've already had a first order for an OEM production plant to test it in China. It's a very large global brand. This is all very exciting. These are very large volume opportunities. Nothing to write home about. That's why we haven't done a press release on it. But yes, a great first order from a very large OEM. We're talking to others. It's very prospective, a very large opportunity. There's $200 billion worth of air conditioners made a year. Almost most of them are made in China. There are still a lot made in America. We're also talking to OEMs there as well. The opportunity there is to basically have a product which really sets the benchmark for corrosion-resistant and energy-efficient equipment, air conditioning, and then create a new demand again in the aftermarket, which of course we are, you know, already working on. So it's the OEMs and the aftermarket. It clearly big opportunities, and they're very different. One's bulk plant OEM style, which we've got our new plant up and running, and at bulk orders, hopefully, you know, we pull in some of those, and our plant can really work its work itself in, because our costs have definitely come down. But the other one is obviously small packs, which is for the aftermarket, which is where we started off to create the demand, and that's what we continue to focus on as well.
All right, let's move on to the lubricants division. Look, there are still more questions, but I am going to save some of those for future interviews and a webinar that we will plan in the future. Lubricants, that division, when will the lubricants be available for sale? It's a question that was sent in. I think they already are available for sale, but what can you tell us on that?
Yeah, that's right. Indeed. We're just looking at finalizing the engine fuel data. It's very, very prospective, very, very exciting. We'll get that data out. We've just got to get it through University of Queensland to sign off and get them to verify it. But that, yeah, the fuel, the G lubricant is definitely available. We sell it in 5 liters, 5 liter packs, which then dilutes down to 500 liters. So it's a very economic type product. Pretty good fuel savings, I have to say. So when we come out with, which hope to do in very short time, the engine fuel consumption data, and then, you know, that I've always said that was going to be our biggest product, and it's been lurking in the wings, and hopefully we can come out shortly with that and really show what it can do. And there's got some really some big companies interested in trialing that. So that's very exciting, and looking at, you know, pushing that out with the data shortly, and then hopefully push them into some good sales.
So would Rio Tinto or other customers, who would some of the other customers be, and would Rio Tinto be a customer?
Yeah, I think they're all big fuel consumers, and you know, all the big miners, Rio Tinto certainly. So all big opportunities to look at saving their emissions and saving their fuel expenses, which is obviously one of the reasons why, you know, Rio Tinto is working with us. And you know, we've publicly said that in prior press releases that we're working with on this. So it's very exciting around that. So we put two together. We're working with one of the biggest fuel users in the world, because they've got to move massive amounts of equipment around, and then we can help them hopefully in this space. You put all that together, big opportunity to help everybody with our products and make good revenue for GMG as well.
All right, Craig, final question. Talking more corporately here, when it comes to the cash position of the company, we talked about the cutback in expenses that the company was going through. What does that carry over to in terms of, are you running out of cash? Do you need to raise cash? Give us more insights on the cash position, please.
Yeah, so we're not running out of cash. We've got cash fine. We're managing it very carefully, as anybody should, any business does. We've got, across the spectrum of the year, we've got about $3 million coming in from Rio Tinto. We have more than $2 million. Now, we can't guarantee that, but typically about $2 million coming in from R&D tax rebate. And then we also have our revenue coming in and our costs coming down because we're moving from R&D to a commercial operation. We've got a target of $4.5 million cost reduction, which we're largely there. We'll come out eventually and say where we got to. But a lot of those cost reductions came through a streamlining of projects and operations into one team while we're waiting on the next phase of the next projects we're going to do. So you put all that together and we're not cash flow positive, but we're actually quite close. And I think you'll see that, you know, the next quarter results, and then you'll start to see, you know, where we might have been thinking cash flow positive in kind of 2026-7 because of all the expenses we had. Now we're really trying to see that if we can bring that into next year because of the ability of sales. We're focusing on sales in very key areas. We're learning from what we've been what's been working, and our costs have come right down. All very exciting. We put all that together. We're becoming a very fast, nimble machine, and hopefully soon cash flow positive. But we still need to do a bit of work with the sales. But we're kind of, you know, we're a long way there compared to where we were a couple of months ago.
One other thing we should mention is the company has just secured a funding agreement with the state government of Queensland for a grant of up to $2 million Australian to fund the proposed automated battery pilot plant. That news was released March 25th. Craig, we're going to wrap it up here. Thank you very much for addressing all those questions. And thank you, everybody, for continuing to send me all your questions. Please keep them coming. I'll get Craig back on the show, as well as keep working towards a webinar that I'll keep you all up to date on. Craig, thank you again for your time and addressing these questions.